Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Here is another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Caller, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Caller from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay, well, we got us all together. We got we have somebody else hanging out in the green room. See, I'm going to use terms that I don't get to use anymore, but we're going to bring him up. But really quick, Sandy, Nolan, I'd love to hear what's going on in studios for you. I mean, we're all still isolated. I think Lori and I have gone out to a restaurant. Well, it wasn't actually a restaurant. We went out to a winery. That was kind of big news. The local wineries have opened back up. So we had to make a reservation to go to our own winery that we're a member of. And, you know, we went and hung out once, but So here's where it's at. I'm not sure you're all going to go with the same, hopefully you're not in the same mentality, or hopefully you are. It's amazing to feel as busy or busier this year of COVID than in past years. I mean, it's a different type of busy, but we're actually expanding our design team. We just brought on a new designer.
It's busy with a huge helping of stress added on.
Yes. Yeah, it's a stress.
So it feels even busier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for a while, we never really stopped handling PowerPoint design. I mean, that's what we're known for. I mean, we do all kinds of other projects, but it did slow down, and a number of presentation and like those presentation design projects, they're numerous again. Like per week, it's like a listing, and you know, it's not like, okay, I guess we're going to put this one over to this person because they don't have anything going. It's like, okay, who can now take this on? Mm-hmm. And of course, the new show site for us is not traveling to ballrooms around the globe, but heading to one of our four dedicated broadcast studios to run these virtual events. And on the occasion, we get to go to a company and like go sit in a room with a bunch of techs. There's never an audience. Sometimes there's the presenters there, but it's, you know, I'm going to need a vacation soon. I'm just saying that.
Oh, well. You should take one.
Sandy, what are you doing?
Well, you know, I think it's this time of year is always busy for us. And it's probably a combination between companies' fiscal years. There are those clients who have been scrambling. They want to spend their year-end budgets. And then there are those clients who have their new fresh budgets and they're spending that. They want to spend that. So it's been a crazy busy time for me. Again, I love it. On another note, I signed on as a speaker at the April conference, Present to Succeed. Nolan, I think you mentioned it at our last. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I'm glad to hear you're presenting.
Thank you. I'm going to co-present with Echo. We're doing a session that provides, basically, it's a guide to resources, skills, and community in the presentation industry. So it's a little different from anything I've ever done before, but I'm really, really looking forward to it. And of course, it's always a blast to hang out with Echo. Nolan, I know you're presenting.
Well, yeah, I learned I was presenting yesterday on Twitter because I didn't know it last time. I
knew, you're kidding.
No, I knew I was presenting last time I mentioned it on the last episode, but I didn't know it was public yet until I looked on Twitter and somebody mentioned it. So I guess, yes. Yeah, so yeah, I'm presenting. I'm doing a 4-hour workshop on data visualization for presentation, and then also a 45-minute session on inclusive presenting. And it's just the online training, the online webinars. I did a big one for Training Mag Network yesterday. I also just want to mention every month approximately, I'm a co-host of a webinar series for the Presentation Guild called Inspired by Design. And I'm doing, we alternate with Julie Turberg hosting and presenting. And next week I'm presenting on a topic on data visualization. So if you are a member of the Presentation Guild, that's one of the many benefits.
It is a beautiful webinar. It's short. It's only about 20 minutes, but it's information packed and it's beautiful. Between the work the two of you do and the knowledge that you have to impart, it's just amazing. So I encourage our members to the guild members to drop in. And it is also members have access to the complete video library.
Yeah.
Which I take advantage of regularly because I never seem to get it on my calendar. Hey, Nolan, what's happening with you besides new webinars for the Guild? And what was the other one you just did?
We did one for Training Magazine Network.
Training Magazine.
That's a huge, huge listenership or viewership or audienceship. And I've just got a bunch of private clients too. We continue to do webinars for as well.
Nice.
So, yeah. So a lot of that.
Did you say a 4-hour workshop as a virtual event?
Yeah. I've never quite done that. So we're going to see how that goes.
But that's amazing.
Yeah. Should be interesting. Let's talk about news. What's happening in the world of presentation, Microsoft, PowerPoint? Troy, you got anything?
Okay, let's start off with the world of Microsoft kind of as a whole. And this does impact PowerPoint. Microsoft is, I don't know, like the 90th time it seems. They're updating the naming for what I just call stable early release beta and super early release beta. Yeah, I have an official email now. But this time I think it's actually good. What they're announcing is that Windows, iOS, Mac, and Android, I mean, I don't know if people actually realize it, but they used to build separate versions of Office for all four of those platforms. And then iOS, they even had a separate iPad version versus an iOS. Anyways, they've been consolidating them all. And I know there's some really big kudos on the, you know, from coders, like saying that's amazing. They have the same code base that works in everything. But they're using the same names, finally, for all of them. So this is the official explanation from Microsoft. Update channels control how often Microsoft 365 apps are updated with new features, quality and security updates, and bug fixes. So there are three levels. There's always been three levels, except the iOS. I'm looking at this list. It has two. But here's the names they're going with. And they're kind of the names, if you're on Windows, I think we've been seeing. It's current channel. In other words, that's the one that's, if you were to download and install, that's what you get. Current channel preview means, hey, we're giving you a preview of some of the new features. We think they're very stable. I'm on enterprise level version of 365. That's as far as I can go because they don't want enterprise clients to actually be like super aggressive and be like the beta channel, which is the name of the third one. So it's current channel preview, and beta channel. I just think it's kind of funny that there's like another announcement.
That's different from a week and a half ago.
No, this is like literally, this is an email that came in just this morning from Microsoft doing, because I'm on the, I get the admin stuff.
Yes.
And this is literally their official announcement saying as of today. So
can we just make this a regular feature that we, at the beginning of each podcast?
I think it should be bingo. What is the name this week of? Okay. What else we got? What's news oriented?
On the Mac, with the November update, if you have an old, let's put it this way. If you have an older OS than Mojave 10.14, if you're that many behind, Microsoft will no longer support updates for Microsoft 365. So the current one, and actually I want to get into this, I have some questions for Mark later, we can talk about this, but Catalina, I believe, is the current one. I'm still on Mojave, which is one before, but if you're on anything prior to that, prior to 10.14, you're out of luck if you're on Microsoft 365.
Here's my thing.
Yeah.
You can still install, like, because I literally had this conversation 2 days ago because somebody, you know, we're talking through a remote system, so we can't see everybody, and they're not loading Mac. And I'm like, what version of the Mac are you using? And I was asking about the OS, and they said, oh, I'm using PowerPoint 2008. I was like, what? Like, that should be illegal. Like, how can that even be installed? Like, I literally have this announcement saying that Microsoft is not going to support the newer, like, Office 365. And this guy has a, let's hear, 2008. Let's say it's 2020. It's possible. That's a 12-year-old software that he's still running. How is that allowed? Okay, never mind. Oh, it was bad.
Troy.
Mark is joining us. We're going to bring him in early because this
week, we're going to give Mark a full introduction later, but
yeah, this is Adobe Max happening like this week. And Adobe Max is there's a lot going on, but Adobe Max is always an amazing event. Mark, we'll introduce you later, but what do you think about Adobe Max happening in the middle of, as a remote thing and everything else? I mean, that's big news in the design world for us.
Yeah. So this will be, I think this is my 14th year attending, and I think it's my seventh or eighth year speaking.
Seriously,
So it's pretty cool, man. And I had my doubts, right? Just like you guys, I was actually traveling at the beginning of the year, working for a client in Portugal. And halfway through the event that we were working there, they got an email from their CEO saying this event is canceled, as in leave. And so that was like, oh, wow, this COVID thing is really getting serious. And then 5 days later, by the time I got to London, about 80% of the events we had lined up for the year were canceled. So I literally went from being at an event to sitting in a hotel bar, reading my emails, watching contracts drop.
And oh, yeah.
And to bring this full circle, one of my favorite events of the year is that I get to speak at Adobe Max, right? You know, I don't think, for those of us that speak at events, you definitely don't do it for the money, right?
So, right. No.
You do it because you want to go be a part of your community and you want to connect. And Max is probably one of the greatest events for recharging my creative batteries. And it's just so inspiring, the scale of it. You know, last year we had just under 15,000 people in attendance physically. So with events canceling, I immediately emailed Adobe and said, hey, just putting it out there, are we doing this? Is this going to happen? And they really scrambled. There was a lot of back and forth. It really felt like for quite a few months it wasn't going to happen at all. And then I think with events like Creative Pro and others out there that are close to friends at Adobe, at a small scale, proved it could be done. And then someone, rightly so, internally said, hey, you know, we do live streams every day on Behance, like literally 8 hours a day. We do this. Why aren't we going to do Max? And so that really just made everyone feel confident and capable. And so, you know, what I was hearing from internal people was, yeah, it's time to rock and roll. We're going to do this and we're going to do it big. And, you know, we're going to make this the best virtual event we can make it. And then it got very organized and there was weekly meetings. And so I got very excited about it. The part that I think is really going to be interesting is how long the sessions are going to be, right? My classes are typically 90 minutes or 3 hours at max, not counting my pre-cons. And this year, my session is 30 minutes on video. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the social media team had a big influence in that. I think the people that are YouTubers had a big influence in that. And there's just a lot of feedback from people like yourselves who are out there saying, like, wait, you're going to do a virtual thing for 4 hours or 3 hours? Mm-hmm. You know, that's how do you keep the attention in a workshop for that amount of time? So it's going to be great. From the sessions that I've seen previews of, it's really looking amazing.
Cool. So that, wow. And it's free, just to remind people.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
This is a crazy thing right there.
That is
right.
So 'cause
it's
crazy.
Usually quite expensive, right?
Yeah. It's typically about $1,500. I think early birds get it for under $1,000. You know, the old joke was, for people that ever look back at it, you know, years and years and years ago, you would pay $1,500 to attend this thing, but they gave every single attendee a gift. And so the gift was almost always the equivalent of the price of attendance, right? So 1 year they gave us all Microsoft.
An expensive water bottle. Oh.
Yeah. We got I still have my Fuji camera they gave me. Wow. I have a Microsoft Surface they gave me. Like, it was nuts. And then about 5 years ago, the numbers got so big, they were like, you get a sweatshirt.
Hey, I will say, if you did an early registration, as I did, because I'm, you know, Adobe Max is awesome, I did get my shirt. They're like, thank you for early registering. We'll send you a t-shirt. Hey, and the other thing is, Mark, you might not know this one, but did you know that, because I know I do lots and lots of corporate live events, but I know techs that work Adobe Max, and you mentioned the Microsoft Surface. The reason I know that is a very good buddy of mine, Art, saying hi to you. They gave all the techs on the show the same swag. Like, if they were a full-time tech. So a lot of people like wanted to work the show because they knew they would get gear and stuff.
That's right.
Anyways, kind of funny, fun stuff. Hey, Sandy, keep us going. What other news things? Sure. We got to get to the real conversation here, yeah. But there's some good no, things happening.
This is fun. This is, you know, we've had animated GIFs exporting from PowerPoint for 4 to 6 months now. It was a fun thing that happened. Really, really easy to export your PowerPoint slides into an animated GIF. Now, this last week or two, PowerPoint announced that they're going to allow you to export with transparent backgrounds.
It sounds cool. Amazing. I haven't done this yet. Has anybody?
Because yeah, I've been playing around with it a little bit.
And does it?
And it's how is it working?
It removes. I gotta look it up, but I think.
So is it basically the slide background? It just ignores it, and it says if there's nothing there, it's just transparent.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. So if there's something in the master, I believe it will ignore those. Or if you've set a background color. But if you have just like a box that's, you know, that you use as a background, like a floating box on a slide, that's, you know, that's considered content. So it won't.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this will happen. Hey, Mark, we're going to talk later about, you know, because we're all about Adobe, but maybe this will make alpha channel videos for us if they can take the same idea.
I'm super excited about where Microsoft is playing with some of these media exports, because the moment they did animated GIFs and the video exports, it seemed seamless to the users, but we used to do a lot of video export from PowerPoint, and whatever they did with the rendering quality just seems to have improved dramatically in the last 6 months, to the point where we actually had clients where we're building animations in PowerPoint just for looped backgrounds, and then we were making the masters chroma green, dropping them in video and then green screening them out, because it was so much easier to animate some of these things in PowerPoint than it was in, you know, a lot of my beloved Adobe tools.
Hey, we're going to talk about this later, but we started calling by a couple of our design team that are After Effects editors. We started calling PowerPoint After Effects Lite. it was just the faster, easier. Okay, I gotta take a pause here, because we just said all these great things, but we continue, and I'm kind of curious if this, because I know Mark, I believe you're Mac based, and Nolan, you're Mac based. And I don't know how much you present, and Sandy, I know you're Windows and you have your Mac, but we continue. So this is very newsworthy for us, and it's not a good thing. So we just said all these great things, but we continue to get hard hit with presenter view failing during presentations. And this is not just on like, hey, my computer's doing it. This is across a fleet of laptops that are very well, and desktops that are very high end. This is something I reported like 4 months ago, and I know the Microsoft dev team, they're working on fixing whatever's broken. But we're basically at a point of not trusting PowerPoint for a presentation. And that's not a good place to be for a company that puts on presentations. And we've upgraded. We actually went to the effort of upgrading all of our computers. Now, this is a fleet, 30, 40 plus computers for just events, to 32 and 64 gigs of RAM. That was a major investment in this time of year when nobody should be investing. But we still have sent dozens and dozens of frowned reports to Microsoft. I mean, this is a major deal. The simple summary is PowerPoint loses content when running a presentation. Presenter view first stops displaying the presenter notes. And that's actually become a bigger deal, because we're running presentations for presenters that are remote. So they're literally reading the script and we're following their script in the presenter notes. No presenter notes, we have no idea where to go. It's like literally more critical now than it was last year for us. Wow. What else? So you lose the presenter notes, then you lose the next preview, then you lose all the interface buttons. Now, the presentation never fails. Like, what's being exported gets the priority and it still looks great to the audience, but you suddenly can't run it because you can't even find the keys to go forward or read anything. It's pretty bad. If you can escape, the entire PowerPoint edit interface is pretty much just blank. It's just a whole bunch of empty squares. Now, ironically, I think this is a conflict with discrete graphics cards and Microsoft Office and probably some Windows memory management thrown in there. The lightweight computers that we have, like I'll just say the shared memory computers, like Microsoft Surface tablets we have, they don't seem to have as many failures. I mean, it takes a lot more to get those, and they're smaller memory allocations and everything else. So I'm curious if anyone's running like an AMD Radeon graphics, because everything we have is NVIDIA, if they're experiencing the same problem. Microsoft, send a frown to everybody. Microsoft is actively collecting these and trying to troubleshoot. And I don't think it's the PowerPoint team. I think it's, as far as I know, it doesn't happen on the Mac, which tells me, well, Macs use Radeon. So maybe it's the graphics thing. This has been killing us, literally. We're now running an extra computer just to see the presenter notes so we can reference them when it disappears. And we have to find a good breaking point. Oh, usually a video roll. We escape out and you have to close PowerPoint. Anyways, what else is happening in news that somebody could say happy stuff?
Let me just slip this in. New to PowerPoint illustrations. These are not icons. If you go to Insert Icons, there is a new tab called Illustrations, and there's some really nice flat icon style, I would say, SVG graphics. And basically, well, as SVGs, you can change the colors. If you're using a theme, it's always accent number 4. As the main color for these.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then there's PowerPoint chooses gray accents. Now, so that means you can only change that one main color as long as it's an SVG, but of course you can convert it to shape or ungroup it to apply other colors.
But it is very cool. Just to clarify that, like it's there are two colors. There's gray and an accent color. And when you recolor it, it only changes the accent color. It keeps the gray, mm-hmm. which is really neat. Of course, only on the PC at the moment, but I'm sure they will come to the Mac eventually. But yeah, this was really neat. And again, as usual, you know, not really publicized. You know, we have to find out about it. Somebody uncovers it and lets us know. But,
Okay, question. Are you a graphic designer? If yes, the answer to the question of do you use Adobe Creative Suite, it's almost guaranteed to be yes. Then the question is, are you a presentation designer? And if yes, the answer to the same question, do you use Adobe Creative Suite, is almost always yes, but sometimes there's variables. Some people say no. But here's where it gets really interesting. How the Adobe Creative Suite is used is often different by each group of designers. And presentation designers tend to have, well, they have more of an Adobe Microsoft workflow and familiarity that they can kind of be used together in the development of visuals. This week, as we already have mentioned, is Adobe Max. It's very unique this year. First, it's free to attend. That is amazing, people. If you're not attending, go to Adobe Max website, register. If you're listening to this, you might be able to do this post-event. The sessions in and of themselves are fantastic. Just look up Mark Heaps. You'll find all the great stuff there. you know, that's the guy you want to. Okay. Second, it's all virtual. And this is going to be a really good, I'm hoping, benchmark for virtual meetings and how to do large-scale events. And last, the presenter and topic lineup this year is amazing. It's like as amazing as any other year. Now, the time's been condensed, which means there are some changes, but there's it. So today's conversation, you know, as we thought about what to talk about this episode, it seemed like a great fit that we should somehow talk about Adobe. So today's conversation is going to be interesting to both groups of those designers as we dive into Adobe apps and Microsoft PowerPoint and how they can have workflows that leverage each other. And as you've heard, we have Mark Heaps joining us today, so you know it's going to be fun.
Well, welcome to the presentation podcast, Mark. I first met you a couple years ago at my first Creative Pro Week when I was presenting at the Click portion of it, as were you. But you've also been involved with Creative Pro for much longer because in addition to being a big figure in the presentation design world for a long time, you've also been a figure in the Adobe world. And you probably spend as much time with Adobe products as you do presentations, something we're going to talk about. And that's why we're excited to have you today. Before we get to that topic, though, I know Troy was very, very impressed when he saw in your LinkedIn profile that you listed Quark Express. So that's, of course, aging and dating you.
I had no idea you were that old.
I'll refer to the fact that he kept saying Creative Suite there instead of Creative Cloud.
So, Mark, you have done a lot. So just give us a little sort of background on your history and sorted past and all the things you've worked with, all the people you've worked with, and just give us a little introduction.
That's a long story of about 27 years, but I'll try to give the short version. Always been into digital graphics. I went to school for art and design, but I actually sold my first graphic when I was 14, working on a Commodore Amiga. Back in the day, and was actually doing computer illustrations on an 8-bit system and then selling them to retailers in London on loop-to-loop VCR players. I'd make commercials in 8-bit animations and then sell them these TVs and VCR players for their displays. So it's always been my thing. I've always been a computer art graphics guy, which is how I ended up falling in love with Adobe. And I think it was probably in the very mid 90s. I ended up out in Silicon Valley, which was really not intended for anything to do with a career. My brother was out there. And over the years in Silicon Valley, I ended up working as, I first early on got certified by Adobe in Photoshop, Illustrator, and PageMaker. And then I was really fortunate. I think a lot of people probably have this story, but I actually ended up being a manager at Kinko's, of all places, and got really into print and digital workflows there. But, you know, I sort of followed whatever the work would feed me. And that resulted in me working in animation and working in video, and then eventually becoming a senior image expert at Apple. So I ended up retouching like all of the fruit flavored iMacs and the titanium iMacs and things like that. So, you know, basically if someone walked by, they said, oh, that's the Photoshop guy. And that's kind of really what what built my career, was being the Photoshop guy. Although when I worked at Maxim Integrated Circuits, that was my conversion from PageMaker to Quark and really getting deep into that sort of knowledge. And that was really when Acrobat also sort of got turbocharged in workflow and for PDFs. And so, you know, it was super sort of just nerdy for a long time. It was a high level of technical proficiency versus, hey, how creative can you be? It was really on you to see if you could be creative, but you absolutely had to be technical. And I bounced around for a while, worked at different agencies. I was a senior instructor of multimedia at Brooks Institute for about 5 years. And then from there, I ended up working at Google as a manager. And I worked with engineers there on digital imaging solutions and moderation around Google book scanning. I worked on that project with all the libraries. I worked on moderation and engineering solutions for maps and for Street View, and kind of how do we automate those processes. I worked on like decurvature of book pages, scanning them and working with degaussing on sort of old page noises. So I, you know, I think nowadays people know me as a designer and communications person, you know, I've always had one foot in the really deep technical side of things, and then the other side being sort of creative. And then, of course, for anybody that's listening to presentations, they probably already know, but I ended up becoming a director at Duarte. And so Duarte being sort of Nancy Duarte's flagship agency that specializes in presentations. And that really was a big shift in my career. You know, it was sort of like I was riding a high coming out of these Fortune 100 corporations, feeling, you know, kind of like a badass, and thinking I could pretty much walk into anywhere and know what the hell I'm talking about. And within a month of working at Duarte, I was like, I'm getting fired. I'm definitely getting fired. because truthfully, I didn't know, right? I was completely ignorant. I built presentations for tons of people before that, but I built them the same way that every business person, design person builds them. I slammed in bullets. I found some bad art. And even as a designer, right? And I have a degree in design. I didn't treat it the right way.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I got to Duarte, the reason I got to Duarte actually was Apple was a major account of theirs, and Apple contacted them and said, hey, you need to get more staff on your team to be able to support us. And Duarte, at that time, the account director contacted Apple and said, we're struggling to find anybody that can meet the graphic quality of Apple. So do you have any contractors you've worked with? Maybe we can teach them how to be presentation people. And so they threw my name in the ring. And I ended up working there first as a contractor, then a full-timer. But I just didn't know the love that could be put into presentations. And Nancy and a lot of her flagship Foundry team, you know, when I saw what they were doing, I got excited. You know, it really humbled me. And I realized I felt pretty badass with what I was doing. And now I feel like a kid in a candy store because I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I think learning is the most exciting thing you can do. So I embraced it. I took a very low level position. I actually took a $30,000 pay cut a year to join Duarte. And I dove in and I met some amazing individuals. Nolan, you've met, you know, Dan Gard and a few other people. Yep. Who just really opened up my eyes to this world. And so fast forward from that point, I was there for 7+ years. When we moved to Austin, I was still remote as an employee, flying back regularly. And then I ended up leaving Duarte to join a local agency here in Austin that wanted an executive creative director to run the company. And I did that for 1 year. And that was amazing too, because they were heavily focused on e-learning, which I know many of you have connections in. And so I suddenly got to see this next extension of the presentation world through the e-learning lens. And that just kind of brought a lot of things full circle for me in my past: interactivity, video, animation. I was a big Flash guy for many years with Macromedia. So was my wife. You know, we developed applications in Flash for clients. And then all of a sudden, and I'll bring this sort of connected to Sandy here, my wife had been a female-run agency for about 11 years, very successful. And,
okay.
And she was focused on hiring other creatives that were stay-at-home moms. And so they built this nice little niche for themselves and had a bunch of clients. And I was working at the other agency in Austin. I said, this is stupid, man. Like, why am I not supporting you? I've got all these network connections. I have a skill set that you and your team don't bring to the accounts. You know, I'm a bit more of a nerd. And so why don't I join you? To which he was like, yeah, we don't work well together. This is a terrible plan.
I fired my husband at least twice. So,
exactly. Right. And we have completely opposing design styles, design aesthetics. Everything about us is water and oil in regards to that. And that's why it works, because it pushes mm-hmm. us to make things the other side wouldn't. We just had to have an agreement that in our offices, we can't share a space. So, I've been working with her. She's our CEO, and I've been working with her and her team now for 4.5 years. And it's been spectacular because we've really sort of found a niche in the presentation landscape. And what I often joke about is all the jobs Duarte wouldn't have taken. So it's all the stuff that's kind of out there in left field and not your typical presentation work. And if anything, this new COVID time has really forced us to amplify that and try to find other ways of working to be successful for clients. So yeah, that's probably longer than it should have been, but yeah, it's been a wild journey.
Wow. That wow. has been a long, long journey.
We need a transition after that amazing bio and introduction to presentation as a real design niche. Let's start here. Let's talk geeky about Adobe integration in PowerPoint. It's things that people don't. By the way, Mark, that was just amazing. I think that's like going to be the soundbite of the year, is just kind of explaining the whole philosophy of because I followed a very similar path. What's really funny is a very similar path, because I used to do Flash and director stuff. And that's how I got into presentation. They're like, could you make some of that stuff happen in here? And so, you know, it's like, and I suddenly felt like, oh, this is fun again. Yes. But that was in PowerPoint 2000 land. So it was a lot of work, but anyways, you know, so after that amazing bio introduction to presentation as a design niche, let's kind of talk geeky about Adobe integration in PowerPoint, because I think it's things people don't think are possible and they don't think they should work. And we're going to get to workflows where we might create assets that start in Photoshop or Illustrator, but you can use, you know, you can pretty much make use of anything. Well, let's phrase it this way. Can you make use of anything from Adobe in PowerPoint? Let's just start with that. Can we take Adobe assets and put them into presentation?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So to be super geeky, you know, Adobe's done a really amazing job over the last few years, and I'm thankful they've given me an opportunity to bring presentation as a valid consideration to their engineering teams. They flew me to India last year, and I literally had like 2 days of meetings explaining why their apps are not supporting our community, and really got to just show them how we band-aid and hack and work through things. And I'll point out, just for back end, the CEO, Shantanu of Adobe, and Satya, the CEO of Microsoft, are like childhood friends. So there's never been a better time to have these two companies for our community talking to one another. Going back to your question though, you know, you can't have a native layered PSD in PowerPoint. You can't have a native AI file in PowerPoint, but man, is it better today for the way that you can get your assets over. And I think everybody knows sort of like, oh yeah, PNGs, transparent backgrounds, we can get those over pretty easy. The part that I'm really excited about, and it's been kind of off the radar, even many people in our community, I still find don't have it installed, is using the Creative Cloud add-in for PowerPoint to work between Photoshop or Illustrator into PowerPoint directly. And this has been a game changer for my team.
So give us a rundown of how that works. So this is a third, this, I mean, it's a third party Adobe add-in. You get it from the get add-ins in Microsoft, PC and Mac. Once you install it, then what? Like, okay, so it's there. It's got a, how do you use it then?
Yeah. So if you haven't played with libraries before, right, and it's confusing to a lot of people. So libraries, a lot of people think of it as kind of a digital repository, right? It's, they treat it as if it's Dropbox and it's Google Drive or something like that. And it's really not. Internally, I call it a pipe. And what it is it allows you from within the program. So you could be in Photoshop, you could be in Illustrator, open up the libraries panel. Let's say, for example, you select all of your layers in your Photoshop file, and there's a button in the library panel that says add graphic. And so you can have a directory that's called, you know, presentation event name or whatever. And you hit add graphic, and it adds that layered PSD file to the library. Now, you can share that library with anybody on your team or even clients. And if they're not like using the Adobe program, if they don't have Photoshop, when they get that link, they can look at it in a Chrome browser and they can see your Photoshop files, whatever files you want, give you feedback. It's amazing, right?
The ability to see a layered PSD in a non-Adobe product is absolutely mind-blowing to me, by the way.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, it's like, why is this not everywhere?
Completely, completely. And so now you have this library panel, which is limited in comparison to what it does in the Adobe tools. And I think, you know, that's just a Microsoft to Adobe thing, or vice versa. But when you open that panel, your PSD file is there. And you can literally click on the little thumbnail in your library panel in PowerPoint and say insert, and it drops it straight there. So I'm not saving files to my desktop.
It's not a layered PSD. It's rasterized.
It does get flattened, right? But, okay. And here's where I'm pushing the team. I want that to be a dynamic link. There's a lot of things I see opportunities for in the future where if you edit the PSD, like you would with InDesign, for example, it automatically updates in the working file. But as far as like speed and workflow, especially now with this all being remote, it's not like, you know, my team can sort of drop it on a shared drive locally. The previous workflow would have been, hey, John, you know, you go edit this icon library. Hey, Sarah, I'm going to have you go over here and edit, you know, this background collage for the Segway slides. And then they would save down their PNGs, or they'd put a PSD up on, you know, a shared server, you know, Google Drive or something. I pull it down. I have to run a batch export. I then place that in PowerPoint. Well, that doesn't happen now for us. We literally say, hey, we're all working with the same Creative Cloud library. We can see it natively in the program. Make your edits. If you double click a PSD file or an AI file in your library panel, it opens in that program. When you make an edit and save, it saves it immediately back to the library. Well, here's the thing. If I'm in PowerPoint and I have that libraries panel open, I see it change. So I just replace it, right? And so I'm completely removing all of the middle steps of saving down, creating a file format, putting it up on a Google Drive or doing any of these things. And it's really fast for us. It's really,
so
really
again, fast. It's not going to update on the slide, obviously, but correct, you're going to have to, because it had rasterized it. So that's like a PSD. It'll rasterize it to a PNG.
Correct.
What else? Will it take vector? I know there's, you can put fonts and text and colors in Adobe libraries. How do those work?
So that's a good question. So at least on the Windows, Windows and Mac side, one of the things I'm pushing them for is right now, if you put an Illustrator file up, and we could get super geeky here about some of the preferences you need to set in Illustrator. But in a nutshell, if you put an Illustrator graphic into your Creative Cloud library and you don't have to upload anything, you literally select the graphic and say, add to library. When you go to PowerPoint and you place that, it places that as a PDF in a container. So you can't ungroup it like we traditionally would. You can't sort of break it apart.
It's
not an SVG, right? So it's not following that workflow that we as presentation designers want it to follow. But, you know, we have a lot of graphics that we don't necessarily want to do that with because we have the library. We're going to have all of our client logos. So we literally have, I'm sure you guys are the same, right? Every PowerPoint presentation designer I know somewhere has a library slide that literally has just gazillions of logos on it that they can then pull from whenever they need them. And that used to be us too. However, now we just have it in our library panel because then I don't have to open a PowerPoint file to go hunt for it. Whatever PowerPoint file I'm working in, the logos are already there. They're always there in the library panel. So we just switch that library and then we place it as a PDF. Now, if you do sort of change a color setting, it treats it like a photograph. So you can crop it again, like placing an SVG, you just can't break it apart. So one of my goals, you know, for next year is saying, hey, how do we get this to treat it as an SVG export? And I can't go too much into detail there, but I'm testing some things for some people. So
that's awesome.
I'm very excited about that. It does, you know, going back to the Photoshop side, it does retain transparency. So if you have a layered PSD and literally like you have iterations, let's say layer comps or just various layer groups that you turn on and off in your design set. We very often design our backgrounds in Photoshop and then we turn them on and off and we would traditionally export them to PNG, right? Well, if you have that layer off it in your PSD and you say insert to PowerPoint, right? You just click it in. It converts it to that PNG with transparency. If I go back and say, okay, now I need a separate one. The advantage of it not linking is I could have Photoshop open at the same time, tab over to that file, turn that layer off, hit save. It goes back to the library. When I go back to PowerPoint, the thumbnail is changed in the library in PowerPoint. I hit insert that. No way does it affect the first one that I placed. So I'm very rapidly getting these transparent PNGs by just going back and forth and turning on off the switches.
So if you bring in a vector, it's going to do a PDF. So that's going to retain the vector information. Do you have control when it rasterizes like a PSD? Do you have control over the resolution that it comes in as?
It's based on whatever the source was that you put in your CC library. So if,
so if you have like a super high res, like layered TIFF, for example, it'll bring in super high res. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we
still
have one
converting
that Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm sure it's converting to PNG probably, right?
Yeah. By default, it always converts to PNG, which is a bit of a bummer on file size management because we do have a lot of files that don't have transparency. And so, you know, it's PNGs are always a little bit larger than the JPEGs when they're flat like that. And so, I wish there was an option of like, how would you like to insert this? Or it being intelligent that when I look at the bounds of this graphic, I don't identify any alpha properties, ergo make it a JPEG. You know, and now I'm getting super nerdy.
Well, I got a question. Wait, hold on. Yeah, I'm unmuted. I got a question on that. And this is great because maybe somebody else will give me a better opinion. I actually have a preference for PNG, even though I know file size is going to be there. Because we're using the Microsoft Cloud Elements, I'm finding a lot of JPEGs getting compressed, recompressed again and again. So, you know, the compression settings in PowerPoint, they go with the computer. They don't go, no, excuse me, let me rephrase that. You have to set them in the file and they travel with it, but you can't set them universally. So we're finding a lot of images getting recompressed and a PNG can't be recompressed. So I've actually kind of made that my favorable workflow. So from that perspective, I don't think the JPEG management of recognizing it as a compressed element is as optimized as we used to be when we were handing off files. So PNG has kind of been my go-to as of late.
Yeah.
But, you know, SVGs are great because they can't, you know, there's no compression applied to them. They're a vector. But I feel like all of a sudden, like we have Creative Cloud. We have Creative Cloud libraries. We share assets among our team within it. I have never used it as a workflow in anything Microsoft oriented. So this is like all of a sudden my mind is done. I'm like ready to hang up the microphone and go play because I just realized there's a whole new world of things I'm missing. This is awesome.
Just to sort of double down on that, again, sort of traditional designers, we think about using Creative Cloud like, okay, we've got the, you know, Photoshop, Illustrator are probably the two biggest supporting tools in the presentation designer's toolbox coming into apps like, you know, PowerPoint and Keynote. But what I've been doing, especially as sort of the creative director, is we have mobile tools now. So I've literally been out traveling and one of my team members has said, hey, I'm over the next day or two, we need to figure out some colors for this or I need XYZ. And I've literally been on the road and seen something and gone, oh my God, that's amazing. Look at that color combo. Cause we're all kind of geeky like that. And I use the Adobe Capture app on mobile and I'll literally take a picture and in the Capture app, it saves to your CC libraries and you can move and manage it, whatever. I've literally been like, hey, just saw this really cool thing. Go look in the library. I've added it. and I don't save it. I don't upload it. It just does it. And then if you have the capture app, you can capture patterns, textures. It'll automatically convert things to vectors for you. You can do font recognition. But the color thing has been huge because I see something, it inspires me. I shoot it. It converts it to swatches. My team can literally pull it down and add it to Illustrator. And then they can use the new recolor feature, which just came out in the last 2 weeks for Illustrator, to like show me comps of the design. And they put it in the library. They don't put it. It already is in the library. And I can look at that on my phone using the Creative Cloud app. So like the ability to just be fluid in design processes has really freed all of us up.
Can you bring swatches into PowerPoint?
You can't yet.
Oh, I'm getting a note about those later too, because I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome to hear.
Yeah,
Can't yet. Okay, you can also put text blocks in Creative Cloud. Can you bring those into PowerPoint?
So you if you put text blocks in, it treats it as a graphic. So what you would end up getting is like a PDF if you tried to place it as artwork. Okay. But one of the things that they have been working on is now, and I love this as a workflow. So you might have a contractor or a team member who mocks up all their designs in InDesign, right? So like David Blattner, those guys, when I work with them, they do everything literally in InDesign. And I go, well, this is great, but I have to make a web graphic and I, you know, animate it. I don't want to work in InDesign. Well, they can literally highlight like a piece of text, like a header. And in library, you can say add character style or add paragraph style. And the latest updates to Photoshop and Illustrator now have character and paragraph styles. So I can literally just have a piece of text in Photoshop and move my cursor over to the library and click on a character style, and it formats the type for me in Photoshop or in Illustrator. So I can have this consistency where I'm no longer punching in numbers and font colors and fonts, you know, anything at all. It lives at the parent creator. And then we borrow from that. So, you know, I want those things to come into PowerPoint. I want them to work through that libraries panel. But I'll tell you, if more people don't use it, these corporations aren't going to see the value in investing in that sort of dev. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, no,
so I'm just saying, let's all step on each other. This is awesome. Yeah,
exactly. That's where the visual would come in handy, the video part. Yeah. But, you know, I'm playing around in it and just logging in. I'm encouraging our listeners to try this add-in. And as I'm playing with it, I have multiple Microsoft accounts. I don't know if I'm linked to the right account. There are all these technical things to get over. But I want to stop talking about this and move on to fonts. I think we should
I got to bring up one though, because so first of all, Sandy, are you on the Creative Cloud, the PowerPoint?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yep. So here's a question for you, Mark, because there's another one that we've even used longer because we have the Adobe Stock. That's what we made a transition to a couple of years ago, and we've stuck with it because it keeps expanding. So the Adobe Stock add-in is another very common workflow, and it's great, except, and this might lead into what we were just talking about here, the API doesn't allow vectors to come in as vectors. Everything comes in as, you know, JPEG. A ping image, I believe, in that case. I don't know. But anyways, they come in as flat art. So, you know, is Adobe looking into, like, let's recognize our vector library as vector graphics that are probably going to be inserted as SVG? Because that's a huge
area. This is a huge point of discussion with the stock team themselves. I mean, one of the number one complaints is if you find a vector asset in stock and you insert it before buying it anywhere, you're getting just a watermarked JPEG, right?
Right.
And they got so many complaints about this that they actually, I believe it was tripled the resolution of the download preview on vector assets compared to the preview resolution.
Oh, interesting.
Because people were saying, hey, I can't really comp and mock things well when something that should be vector, a client doesn't understand why that looks pixelated. And so, you know, what are we going to do about that? And it's I don't know what the resolve is going to be, but it is something that they are bugged about often and frequent in regards to, can we get vectors to be vectors in a preview? And they just haven't figured out how to make that so that you can have scalable vectors while still forcing people to have to come back and buy it.
Right.
That's the challenge there.
And I know there's some Microsoft API limitations on them. They've only recently enabled recognizing other file formats. So I know that's an issue. We had a conversation about the Noun project and how, you know, they're the same thing. So I had a whole great thought on that.
So just to sort of recap, because Troy, you may have run quickly over it. You've got Creative Cloud Libraries, which is an add-in, free add-in from within PowerPoint that you add. Now you do, of course, need a Creative Cloud account, right, that you sign into. And then you also, you talked about Adobe Stock. That also is a plugin that you add separately as well. Again, you need an account to sign into, but once you are, you can pull in your Creative Cloud assets, you can pull in Adobe Stock. And then the other, you know, maybe other big asset that PowerPoint or that Adobe has is fonts and Typekit. Mm-hmm. So let's move into that. Can you make use of Adobe's fonts through Creative Cloud, Typekit within PowerPoint?
Okay, all Presentation Podcast listeners, we're going to fast forward to the episode close, pro and tech tips, and sign-offs, because this amazing conversation, it is truly fantastic and amazing, but it is long. Do not despair. The answer to Nolan's question about using Adobe fonts in PowerPoint presentations and more topics will be in part two of our PowerPoint and Adobe Creative Cloud Can Play Together conversation. Part two of this conversation will be episode 113 and will release on November 3rd. Okay, we started the conversation asking about two designer types, the graphic designer and the presentation designer. And there are, of course, dozens and dozens of categories and niche specialties for visual design. Read Mark's LinkedIn profile, the specialties section, because he goes through about a dozen design specialties that he has in just a few lines. It's not that you are committed to one thing. It's that we build up an experience repository. Visual design, it's all grounded in the same concepts, just different tools and different output methods. It's the question of which is better, Mac or Windows, Lamborghini or McLaren, Adobe or Microsoft. And the answer for me is yes. I mean, that's it. Just yes. Every option is better in some scenarios, and often that scenario is kind of personal preference. Side note, has anybody seen the Lamborghini SUV, the Urus Ventanus? It's unbelievable. There is the SUV that I will say is my preference. But as our conversation had as example today, Adobe Creative Cloud, I'm not going to use the word Creative Suite again, Mark. Thank you for calling. And Microsoft, they do have workflow options that go both directions. And one cannot be discounted without the other to accomplish amazing, amazing elements in the hands of a visual designer. Hey, everybody, enjoy Adobe Max, the content, and be inspired. That's my whole goal with it. Mark, I will definitely be catching you at your sessions. And thank you for spending time with us today. This is one of those rare examples where it's going to become, it's a two-part episode, because I think we could have kept talking for a bit longer. Look forward to having you back here again, and we'll join you on anything. I want to pause here and have us go into pro and tech tips, because it's fun and we just got to keep going.
Okay, so I'm going to kick off the pro and tech tips, and then Nolan, Mark, and Troy, you can follow up. But I'm going to be a little boring. I already talked about Adobe Color, formerly Cooler or Color, and whatever Troy used to call it. But I've got a link in the show notes, and anyone, if you're interested, it's a free tool, and it's very, very helpful in helping you brainstorm color themes for your PowerPoint presentations.
Well, my tech tip are the Pixstar digital frames. I know a lot of people make digital frames. You can find a lot, but these are the ones we got. One for my dad, then loved it so much, we got one for my mom and now my in-laws. So it's a digital frame that, you know, you can do all sorts of things with and upload images to. But what I like about it is that this particular one is it gives you a unique email address that you can choose yourself. And then after you set it up for your parents, you can then just email photos right from your phone to that email address. You don't have to include subject matter or anything. You can do multiple at a time, and then they just show up on the digital frame. They don't have to do anything as long as you just set it up right the first time. And at this point, we've got a group email now. So we take a photo, we just send it to the group email. It gets sent out across the country to three different frames, and it's just just perfect. And it's got motion sensors to turn it off. And also it's just got a whole bunch of stuff. And you can also control all the preferences remotely from a website. So if my mom wants something changed, I could just do it and she doesn't even have to touch the preference menu. So that's my Pixstar frames. You can get it on Amazon or direct from the company, and I definitely highly recommend them.
Yeah, for me, you know, I know we mentioned a little bit about it earlier, and I mentioned Recosoft, but the one thing, I go to a lot of shops and I work with a lot of other agencies and creatives, and I don't see them using the asset export panel in Illustrator. And it's just one of those things that, as a tech tip, I've seen how much time it can save people, and just literally changing the approaches of how we design, you know, now thinking about a presentation as frames of a video in that way. So being able to draw something across multiple slides, which we don't have that kind of view in PowerPoint, right? We can't see all of our slides connected end to end and then work on them at the same time. Mm-hmm. So versus slide sorter, where you're kind of getting an overview, this allows you to literally draw and design a lot of your frames and your textures and your movement. And what I love about this is it's pulling us away from, hey, do I have to have a logo in the bottom corner and a title in the top? And, you know, it's seeing it more as a media piece. And then when you're done with your art, you just use the asset export panel to export all of those pieces out as individual SVGs, or you use Recosoft to make individual slides. And then just pick your transitions when you're in PowerPoint and put all your text content and icons and, you know, anything else you need to do there. So I just, that's my favorite tech tip, because the more I push people to use that workflow and approach, the more interesting I'm seeing the presentations become.
That is so awesome. We do storyboarding for a lot of our animatics. I explain, we design them all. They're all Illustrator panels, but we drop them all into PowerPoint to get the client input, and we can make quick notations and changes and things like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's an even, like, we use it as a specialty element, and you're using it on a daily basis. And I think 100%. To my team, I think I need to get familiar with that too. Just making a part of it. So I'm going to kind of go boring on mine. I mean, it's very, and I probably have talked about this before, but because we're in the Adobe Microsoft workflows, one of my favorite hacks, so kind of more of a pro tip here, we export a PowerPoint as full frame PDFs. So we end up with all the slides as full frame. Then we go into distiller. Then we go into Acrobat DC and we then do the multiple layout there. So we'll create a custom, you can resize things. So you're not stuck with PowerPoint 6 up in those sizes. You could resize them or make smaller bandings. A lot of times I'm actually doing it because we need it more as a workflow or a reference sheet. We do a 10 up quite often. So it's, three across, five down. So it's 15 up potentially. And you know, we use Acrobat's ability to re-PDF the PDF into custom layouts. It is super, super easy. As long as you have the Creative Suite installed, you know, you just literally open up the PDF in Acrobat and go to print. And then there's a multiple option, and we use it all the time, and people are always amazed. Like, how did you create this custom layout? PowerPoint doesn't do that. I was like, you're right. They don't. So there you go.
That's awesome.
Hey, this is Troy from TLC Creative Services, professional design presentation agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. We have a blog, thepowerpointblog.com. Hey, people, I remembered that number two item I wanted to talk about. We use WordPress for the PowerPoint blog. It is broken. The theme is no longer supported. We actually cannot add new content efficiently. So it's kind of on hiatus while the team comes up with an entire new rebuild. It'll import. It'll take all the old content and stuff. So the PowerPoint blog is awesome. It's been going since 2006, but there is no new content being added right now because literally the theme is broken. The developer no longer exists and it's now in process. So we're tlccreativeservices.com. Go to our website that hasn't been updated in 3 years, tlccreative.com. And let's go on to the next person, Nolan.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, where you can get lots of free downloads and goodies. And if your organization is interested in online training in data visualization or presentation, that's what we do. Drop us a line and take a look at nolanhamescreative.com.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me to join in today. It's always cool talking to some peers in the community and people that are passionate about it. I guess if I was going to plug anything, I'm not very good at this this part of any of these interviews that I do, but I would just say if people have signed up for Adobe Max, please go check out my session. I'm doing one on Illustrator that's called playing in Illustrator for professional designs. I'm a big proponent for just playing and exploring and doodling so that you can be inspired and turn that into real world projects. That's what that session is about. And then I have another session that is essential tips that all designers should know in Photoshop about workflow. So I've got those two. And currently I'm at 30,000 people registered for those two sessions.
Oh my gosh. Awesome. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and it's growing literally hundreds by the hour as I keep logging in and checking to see where it's at. So hopefully people watch that. And of course, if anybody does watch it or they want to follow up with me after this, I'm really active on social media if you ignore my political posts. And so at Life by Pixels is my name. And we have a Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/lifebypixels. And I post tips and tricks there on how to work with Adobe tools. I haven't done too much in PowerPoint yet because I tend to save that for Click, but maybe I'll start sharing some things there.
So awesome. Thank you, Mark, for joining us. This has been great. Sandy, close us out.
This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org, and I'm on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as @PPTWiz.
Also through the podcast website, you can contact us with episode suggestions, comments, or questions for the hosts. It would be great if you'd mention us, leave a review, and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. And please, let other designers know about us. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated. New episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.